road trip and the subsequent writing process, I've watched Jeff come into his own. Days after our heart-to-heart, he was banging out some of the most hilarious and useful instructions I've ever seen anywhere. That Braveheart metaphor in the last chapter? Come on. He's also begun to own his challenges in a whole new way. He started off our road trip dealing with nagging self-consciousness because, quote, I felt like I wasn't some teacher with perfect mental hygiene. Now he has truly internalized the idea that his flaws actually make him a better teacher. I've learned how to be comfortable in my own public skin. I feel like I'm finally ready to do this, and the book and road trip experience helped cement that. I love the poetry and symmetry of it all. Just as Jeff taught me to not be so uptight and striving in my meditation practice, our experience working on this book together has played a role in making him more comfortable furthering his teaching and writing career. Although, in typical fashion, Jeff primarily embraces the idea of professional advancement because he feels it will enable him to help more people. Whatever the motivator, it's been incredibly gratifying to watch my friend finally feel ready to step out and let other people see that he is as talented as I know him to be, even if he isn't always aware of it himself. Oh, and one last update. Jeff no longer lives with roommates. He and Sarah got married and got their own place shortly before we finished the book. The reason I relate all of the ups and downs of the post-road trip period is to make an important point. Just because you've started meditating, or even if you've written a whole book on the subject, your life is not going to become a nonstop parade of rainbows and unicorns. The whole 10% happier thing is simultaneously flippant and the most accurate description I can muster of the benefits of meditation. You will, as I do, get caught up in the mindless momentum of doing and getting, of being stingy or distracted. We're all like schnauzers who soil the rug and need to have our snouts shoved into it. For the record, Jeff doesn't like the schnauzer analogy. He says it's aggressive, but this is my part of the book. The game, and you truly can't hear this enough, is just to start over again and again. On the cushion, this means noticing when you're lost in thought and then escorting your attention back to the breath. In the rest of your life, this means seeing when you have messed up, engaging in a little bit of what the Buddhists call wise remorse, as opposed to unconstructive spirals of self-flagellation, picking yourself up, and getting back into the mix. It ain't easy, but you almost certainly will get better over time. Remember, you are trying to hack millennia of evolution. We are bred for threat detection and self-centeredness. The lessons learned through meditation run so counter to our instincts, to let the voice in our head run wild, to chase pleasure blindly, to grasp at things that won't last, that we need constant reminders and constant permission to fail and begin again. I find this notion hugely comforting, and so should anyone who tells themselves they're not cut out for meditation. In the end, we're all shitting on the rug. Meditation, per Jeff, is a kind of disembedding from the various trances of, say, insufficiency or unworthiness in which we live our lives. The more mindful you are, says Jeff, the more you see that you are, in fact, ensnared in dozens of nested trances. But it is possible to burst your own bubble of self-absorption, to break the chains of emotional peonage and psychological serfdom. When you clear away the cuckoo, what comes forward is greater attunement to other people and animals, and also closer connection to life's fundamental mysteries. You shift from being stuck in the content of your thoughts to being amazed that you are thinking in the first place. This is what Jeff had in mind when he said on the bus that the most important thing in the world is, quote, to understand the sacred fact that you're alive. At the heart of the meditative act is a deeply empowering notion. As I stated at the beginning of this book, happiness is a skill, one that you can train just as you train your body in the gym. Desirable qualities such as calm and compassion can be cultivated. Human beings can change. Old schnauzers can learn new tricks. Speaking of which, I should point out that Robert Johnson, the real person, not the voice in my head, underwent something of a personal revolution later in life. He started being reasonably nice. In his 80s, he discovered email and Twitter as a way to keep in touch with his grandchildren. He would bang out via the hunt and peck method trenchant analyses of current events and even on occasion words of grandfatherly encouragement. He became a pleasant presence at holiday parties. In fact, Bianca, who met him after the transformation, only remembers him as a courtly older gentleman. I'm not sure how or why he affected this change. As far as I know, meditation was not involved. Maybe dotage mellowed him. Maybe he just got tired of being an asshole. He ultimately died of a stroke at age 90, reportedly flirting with a nurse on the medevac flight. My wife and I gave our son the middle name Robert as a nod to the potential for human transformation. And also, by the way, in honor of my dad, whose middle name is Robert, and who, for the record, has never been an asshole. While Robert Johnson changed without the aid of meditation, I do not advise you to leave your own happiness to chance. As Jeff and I have tried to make clear, we do not believe meditation is the only route to personal fulfillment, but it is a pretty damn good tool to have in your kit. An insightful bit of philosophy can give you temporary doses of perspective. Somebody smart can point out to you that you live in an infinite universe and that you're just a speck, subject to the whims of health and love and economics and weather. And maybe that leaves you inspired or more spacious for a day. But does it survive first contact with a traffic jam or a toddler tantrum? What the practice of meditation does is help actualize this wisdom into your everyday life, drilling it into your neurons. It's like the difference between watching sports and working out. So come on, join the next big public health revolution. Help create a saner world. Do it for yourself. Do it for everyone in your orbit. Get off your ass and then get back on it and meditate. Welcome to the party. Resources to help you keep meditating. If Jeff and I have done our job correctly, this book should leave you wanting to dive more deeply into meditation. What follows are some practical ways to do so. The 10% Happier Podcast. From the Dalai Lama to RuPaul, every week I interview a fascinating person about his or her meditation practice. And if that person doesn't have a practice, we teach them live. Writers, teachers, scholars, athletes, military officials, politicians, celebrities, we welcome all sorts. Hearing personal stories and varying perspectives on practice can provide motivational rocket fuel. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. The 10% Happier App. While guided audio versions of every meditation in this book are available to you for free on the app, we also have much more on offer. My teammates and I have brought together some of the best teachers in the world who provide lessons about how meditation can help with stress, eating habits, relationships, sleep, and more. We believe that what sets us apart is our mix of both video and audio content, as well as our insistence upon approaching the meditative endeavor with a sense of humor. Plus, if you sign up, you will get a coach, a real person, not a robot, who can answer your questions and help you stay on track. Once again, here's the link to download the app and unlock the content. 10%happier.com/access. The Consciousness Explorers Club. That's Jeff's group. The CEC is a registered not-for-profit dedicated to exploring meditation and personal growth practices in a playful, social, pluralistic way. The website features free guided meditations, short articles, and various course and retreat offerings. Jeff says he hopes the CEC can become a resource for community practice around the world, so all ideas and support are welcome. To sign up for the CEC's newsletter and get involved, go to cecmeditate.com. Dan and Jeff on social media. You can find me at facebook.com/DanHarrisABC. On Twitter, my handle is @DanBHarris. And on Instagram, it's @DanHarris. A little confusing that one has a B, the other doesn't. Sorry about that. Jeff is a Luddite who is not on social media, but he does have a website, jeffwarren.org. Books we love. You will notice that many of the titles listed in just a minute contain the word Buddhism, which may at first blush seem out of place in a reading list designed for skeptics. However, Buddhism is practically tailor-made for freethinkers. The Buddha did not claim to be a god or a prophet, and to the extent that he espoused such ideas as karma and rebirth, he explicitly told his followers to take them or leave them. He didn't even envision something called Buddhism. He was simply teaching people to meditate and behave ethically. It is true that in many parts of the world, people do practice Buddhism as a religion, complete with elaborate metaphysical claims, but you are under no obligation to accept these. I was raised by secular scientists in the People's Republic of Massachusetts. As I like to joke, I did have a bar mitzvah, but only for the money. I have spent my career as a proud skeptic. My favorite part of being a journalist is the right, or the obligation, really, to examine everything and everyone with a healthy amount of doubt. Nevertheless, I call myself a Buddhist. That doesn't mean I believe in anything I can't prove. I'm not sure the Buddhists are right about reincarnation or enlightenment, but I am convinced that they're correct about the ego, about the inevitability of death, and about the superiority of compassion over unbridled selfishness. The books we're going to list for you now approach Buddhism and related contemplative traditions with both clear eyes and open minds. Here's my list. Why Buddhism is True by Robert Wright. Waking Up by Sam Harris. Buddhism Without Beliefs, and another book called Confession of a Buddhist Atheist, both by Stephen Batchelor. Real Happiness, and also Real Love, both by Sharon Salzberg. When Things Fall Apart by Pema Chodron. Altered Traits by Daniel Goleman and Richard J. Davidson. The Trauma of Everyday Life, and another book called Advice Not Given by Dr. Mark Epstein. One Dharma and Mindfulness, both by Joseph Goldstein. On Having No Head by Douglas E. Harding and Evolving Dharma by Jay Michelson. And here's Jeff's list. The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James. Coming Home by Lex Hickson. A Path with Heart, and also After the Ecstasy, the Laundry by Jack Kornfield. The Science of Enlightenment by Shinzen Young. Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism by Chogyam Trungpa. The Making of Buddhist Modernism by David L. McMahon. The Progress of Insight by Mahasi Sayadaw. Mastering the Core Teachings of the Buddha by Daniel M. Ingram. Be As You Are, The Teachings of Sri Ramana Maharshi, edited by David Godman. Waking the Tiger by Peter A. Levine. Destructive Emotions, A Scientific Dialogue with the Dalai Lama, narrated by Daniel Goleman. Waking, Dreaming, Being by Evan Thompson. Radical Dharma by Angel Kyoto Williams, Lama Rod Owens, and Jasmine Sayadola. The Mind Illuminated by Chula Dasa, also known as John Yates. Non-Duality by David Loy. Mysticism by Evelyn Underhill, and For the Time Being by Annie Dillard. So that's not by any means an exhaustive list of all the books you could or should read. We will continue to update and expand it at 10percenthappier.com/reading. Retreats. For many reasonable people, the idea of going away to a retreat center and sitting silently with a bunch of strangers is irredeemably abhorrent. I get it. That's the way I used to feel. I have four pieces of good news for you. First, doing retreats is by no means mandatory. I did one for the first time in part because I was working on a book and needed some shit to write about. However, if what you're looking to do is establish an abiding daily-ish habit, you can definitely do so successfully without attending any retreats. No shame in that game. Second, the other reason I attended, or to use the term of art, sat my first retreat was curiosity. I had an inkling that meditation was both useful and meaningful, and I wanted to see what would happen if I dramatically upped the dosage. I certainly got results, although not always the ones I wanted. For the first few days, I was thoroughly miserable, But then I had a breakthrough of sorts where for about a day and a half, I experienced a dramatic diminution of mental chatter and, as a consequence, a kind of happiness I had never tasted before. And then, of course, I went straight back to being miserable. I have gone on to do many more retreats, and I hope to continue for the rest of my life. They are a fantastic way to train the skills that Jeff describes in this book: concentration, clarity, equanimity, friendliness, and enjoyment. Speaking of Jeff, here he is with his take.
I love retreats. First of all, it's just nice to switch gears and get out of the daily grind. Retreats give us perspective on our lives. They also lead to insights and breakthroughs. Suddenly, we really understand this thing we may have heard 100 times before. Whatever it is, acceptance, being in the moment, impermanence, some pattern of thinking or behavior, the teachings now make sense on a whole new level. These insights ripple out into our lives, and they boost our motivation to continue with practice.
Thank you, Jeffrey. The third piece of good news about retreats: if you can't stomach a full 7 or 10 day meditation of palooza, there are plenty of options for day-long workshops or weekend retreats. Although, and I have to say this, in my experience, there is a real benefit to doing the longer retreats because, frankly, it can take a few days for the mind to settle. Fourth and final positive tidbit: at the 2 retreat centers I'm about to describe for you, the physical settings are beautiful and the food is surprisingly delicious. Okay, so the first meditation center I'm going to tell you about is called Insight Meditation Society. It was founded by Sharon Salzberg, Joseph Goldstein, and Jack Kornfield back in the 1970s. It's located on a glorious patch of land in central Massachusetts and offers everything from weekend retreats to, for real, a 3-month course. People actually do that. The other retreat center is called Spirit Rock. It's the West Coast Sister Center, founded by Jack Kornfield, and it too is located on a gorgeous patch of land, this one north of San Francisco. For a full list of retreat centers, you can check out 10percenthappier.com/retreats. Whether you opt for the retreat option or not, there is practically infinite potential for expansion in your meditation practice. As my teacher Joseph Goldstein says about our inner world, this whole thing is vast. As Jeff puts it, the insights go on and on. What begins as a technique to manage stress can become an inquiry into who and how we are. We find things are not quite as they seem. Life is broader than we once imagined it to be. And so, it seems, are we. In conclusion, keep it going. In the words of the Vietnamese Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, happiness is available. Please help yourself to it.
Hi, Jeff here. We'll finish with those guided meditations we promised you at the start of this program. This guided meditation is from the 10% Happier app. You can get access to all the guided meditations in the book by heading to 10percenthappier.com/access to download the app and unlock the content. Hello, Jeff here. We need reasons to reinforce life's easy positives, to counter what some contemplative neuroscientists like to call the brain's, quote, negativity bias, quote. This is the near universal human tendency to overfocus on the slings and arrows of fortune. That's what we're going to do in this practice. The meditation is relatively straightforward. The idea is to see if we can find a quality of enjoyment in the practice itself. The more we enjoy a sensation, the more concentrated we find we can become, which in turn increases the enjoyment. So it's a nice feedback loop to get into. A note here, when I say enjoyment, I don't mean being totally blissed out. It's more an attitude that we bring to practice. The decision to appreciate something a hair above neutrality. So, if enjoyment is there, great. If not, no big deal. You can still get plenty out of this practice just from building up the concentration and the equanimity. So let's dive in. Close your eyes, or keep them half open if you prefer, and take a few deep breaths. Okay. Each exhale is an opportunity to smooth out the lines of the face a bit, to relax the throat and shoulders. Try to notice as you exhale any settling that happens. Maybe the way the diaphragm relaxes, or the way the body sinks in exhaustion because, frankly, you're working too hard and you should meditate more. Focus on the sensation of breathing at the nose or the chest or the belly. You can use a note here if you like. In, out, or rising, falling. Breathe naturally, like you've done a billion other times in your life. Except this time, you're doing it with the attitude of deciding to find this experience enjoyable. It can feel nice just to breathe. So there are different ways of connecting to this enjoyment quality. It may be that the sensation of breathing is already subtly pleasurable for you, in which case, just run with that. But sometimes a bit of mental reframing can also help. So for example, you might connect the idea that every time you breathe in, the oxygen is filling you with vitality. Or that breathing is a kind of soft massage for your insides. However you orient, stay with the feeling of breathing. Staying with the breath. And when you're ready, try shifting your attention to the sense of your whole body sitting there. You're noticing your breathing, but see if you can also notice that the breath is happening within a slightly larger container of the body itself. The feeling of the body. So the breath is rising and it's falling. But there's also the sensation of sitting there. If you notice any uptightness in the body about anything, just see if you can breathe out and soften through the front. The idea is to bring a subtle sense of enjoyment to just sitting there, to being in your body. It helps to smile, even a non-committal Mona Lisa half-grin. Appreciating the existential hilarity of sitting with your eyes closed in your living room or whatever, tripping out on the feeling of, yes, having a body. So you're still focused on the sensation of breathing, only now you've widened the bandwidth a bit, so you're aware of your body too. If thoughts and sounds pass through this container, no worries. In fact, screw them. Screw the thoughts, but screw them in a friendly and enjoyable way, not hating on them. It's more like you just don't care. Sounds and thoughts are just passing by, but you're grooving on the feeling of breathing, of having a body. Just a pleasure-loving hippie truant at an Allman Brothers show. No one ever needs to know. Enjoying the breath. Enjoying the body. This is the meditation. Just before we finish here, stop meditating altogether. The idea is to just sit and lie back with your eyes closed for a little while, relaxing, enjoying this rest. When you're ready, open your eyes and connect with the room or space around you. The real learning with meditation is always how it affects you in the world. So see if you can explore bringing an attitude of relaxed enjoyment to any activity anytime. Walking, moving your hands, exercising, even lying down and stretching luxuriously like a large jungle cat. Lots of folks do this instinctively. Why not do it intentionally? So thank you for giving this a try. This guided meditation is from the 10% Happier app. You can get access to all the guided meditations in the book by heading to 10percenthappier.com/access to download the app and unlock the content. Hey, this is Jeff. So when we think about meditation, we usually imagine eyes closed, legs crossed, but planted on the cushion or chair in a quiet room. And that's fine. The cushion is like the laboratory, or if you prefer, the gym. But most people don't pump iron in the gym so they can feel good pumping iron in the gym. The idea is to bring your healthy body into your life. Well, the same is true of meditation and the mind. For this reason, some teachers and traditions deliberately emphasize meditation techniques meant to be practiced in the world. Whether you're walking to work, walking your dog, or just walking anywhere, try shifting your attention out to notice sounds. Start by walking at your own natural pace. As you do, pay attention to the feel of your feet on the ground and the alive feeling of your whole body walking. Part of your attention, of course, is on making sure you don't get run over by a bike courier. But the other part of your attention can be moved to the full ambient soundscape, So the rise and fall of voices, or the distant hum of traffic, or the swish and chirp and buzz of nature all around. You are deliberately shifting attention away from the inner world of thoughts and feelings to the outer world of sound. How strange hearing is happening. You are living in ear world. Round sounds, sharp sounds, crisp sounds, warble, warble, whoop, honk, crisp, crip, warble, explore how long you can keep your attention on the odd balloon of sound that moves and shifts and undulates along with you. When you get distracted by sights or sensations or thoughts, notice this. And then notice what it's like to wake up, that little electrical moment of suddenly snap, coming back into awareness. I am mindful, you might say, in a droid-like voice, perhaps moving stiffly like C-3PO to the joy of passing children. Then start again. Okay, so as you're walking, you can also take a moment just to notice the feeling of walking, the feet on the ground. And, of course, you're hearing, you're listening to sounds near and to sounds far. So you can keep this meditation going for as long as you're walking, ending it whenever you like. It's a super useful way, actually, to shift the ratio of our attention from our endless loop of inner perseverations to the world outside. The more you do it, the more you give your insides a chance to settle and cool out. Plus, it's just a good life training to practice appreciating the world around you. Thanks for giving this a try. See you next time.
This is Dan Harris. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics, a 10% Happier How-To book by Dan Harris and Jeff Warren with Carly Adler. This program was directed by Gordon Rothman, executive producer Aaron Blank, guided meditations used with permission from the 10% Happier App Company. Text copyright 2017 by Dan Harris, production copyright 2017 Penguin Random House LLC, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.